What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today we're going to talk about the Chicago Cubs. And they've had some things changing in their team in the past week. And I'm very lucky that I timed this just right because we have Alex Bregman arriving in Chicago. And I have to say, that is great news. You have Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman on the right side of that defense. It already was an elite defense. But now I can comfortably say that this is just one of the best defenses in the majors. You also have PCA in the outfield. And my gosh, all of these pitchers are going to perform a little bit better than expected. So if you want to use FIP and XFIP, which I never recommend, unless you're doing like a very, very quick assessment, they're going to beat that. Because the assumption that they are going to have average BABIP is just wrong because the defense will help them. Also, digging into this, Scott White really turned me on to it, that Wrigley Field prevents more home runs than it allows. There are more extremes because of the wind. However, it was proven 82 home games last year, 51 of them, the wind was coming in and helping pitchers and removing the fly balls, turning into home runs. So just keep that in mind. Obviously, it does change as the season goes on, and you can actually predict that a little bit just because you can see what the weather is like on a given day. But it does mean that Cubs pitchers generally perform better than expected. So that means that you get some little bit extra value in certain guys. Shota Imanaga, for one. I'm still shocked that the Cubs did not want to do 3 years at under $60 million for Shota and instead elected to do, what was it, $20 million or something like that? $22 for 1 year? I know that the Cubs are trying to limit their contracts, and then here's Alex Bregman, fine. But for the lockouts, it was a big plan of theirs. I still think that Shota is better than everyone's giving him credit. And yes, I recognize that Shota was worse in the second half. There was a little bit of velocity dip. There was a little bit of a vert dip. That really was the thing of the second half. His velocity was 90-91 in the first half and never really got back to 91-92. Fine. All of that said, the put-away rates on his four-seamer and splitter were far worse than they should. And I can't emphasize enough, put-away rates are one of the best things for you to look at to understand regression or not. Because for most pitches, they regress. They go back and forth. They're not incredibly sticky year to year. And when you see one that's very below average, as we did see with the splitter and the four-seamer for Shota's skill set, yeah, it should be better next year. And when you have a higher put-away rate, it essentially means higher strikeouts, more efficiency, and fewer hits because those guys that you are striking out can't get a hit now. It's just much better when you have a high put-away rate, right? So I expect that to get better just overall for Imanaga. Also, do not overlook the fact that Imanaga is a whip darling. He had a 2 home run per 9 last year, near 1. He had a 3.71 ERA with a 99 whip, .99 whip, right? That's amazing. And I would much rather have a 3.8 ERA 1 whip guy than a 3.5 ERA 120 whip guy, right? That difference in whip is far more valuable than the 30-point drop in ERA. So Imanaga, maybe he is not a 25% plus strikeout rate guy, but he's not a 20% one. I really do think he's that strikeout and inning pitcher. He will still get you wins. He will still get you that great whip. I don't think it's going to be a 2-homer per 9 next year. This is all good and a very productive starter for your team. So I'm in on Shota Imanaga. Not to mention, he had a hamstring strain, or hamstring injury, I should say, last year. And I would imagine that the vert drop is a product of that and that Tyler Zombro and his crew are going to assess it and help him out and make sure that that vert comes back. I will also mention, yeah, with that, it's a good segue. Tyler Zombro, I really do respect. Tread Athletics guy, worked with Cole Reagans, and now he's the director of pitching in Chicago. They love their cut four-seamers and all of that, but really, I think that they are going to make tweaks to pitchers effectively in season. And when you see something like that where, hold on a second, you lost something, I wouldn't be surprised if... I want to give them a bigger benefit of the doubt that they will be able to tweak those things. Okay, Matthew Boyd. Matthew Boyd was the king of the swatches last year with his great changeup and four-seamer up, and then he had the slider against lefties to handle them. That is the ticket for a southpaw. these days. Also, maybe throw in a sinker. Two left-handers as well, jammed them inside, right? That is what a swatch is in my view. And he was doing so well through July 22nd. Oh my gosh, Matthew Boyd had a 2.2 ERA with a 101 whip and a 23% striker rate. He also went 11-3 across those, what, 3.5 months? And then it was bad. 5.16 ERA, 125 whip, with just an 18% strikeout rate in his final 11 outings. So we have 20 starts versus 11 starts. And you got to decide now, what do we do? Well, if you want to say it's somewhere in the middle, yeah, that's fair because his first half was fortunate. And I'm not even just saying like everything I talked about with the Cubs defense and everything. Yeah, he should have been performing worse than he did. But also, he is not a 60% ICR pitcher with his four-seamer to lefties, right? He was really getting crushed on that four-seamer to lefties in those 11 starts that ended the season. He actually went from a fly ball pitcher, which generally has low BABIP, and as I was telling you before, does not leave the yard as much in Wrigley, to a ground ball pitcher because that four-seamer that was generally up and in was now leaking to the middle of the plate in that second half. So then he allowed harder hit balls. They were burners, and they got more base runners, and he was less efficient. Also, what was really interesting to see was that his changeup allowed just 9 walks through July 22nd in those 20 starts. However, he almost allowed double the number in those 11 starts off his changeup, 17 walks with a changeup, as the changeup command also got worse. So I do wonder if it was a little bit of fatigue for Matthew Boyd. He came back from Tommy John and in 2024. And generally I say, yeah, you should be able to go long in the next year. Maybe Matthew Boyd just needed a little bit extra time. So the command across the board was a little bit worse. So I do think that he's not going to be as bad as that second half, but obviously he's not going to be a 220 year, right? I think he's still going to be a 6-inning darling for the Cubs. Changeup still very good. Fastball should be effective. Like, this is all good still. It's just not top 40, right? I'm drafting him SP7, SP6 in my 12 teamers. 15 teamers, fine. You can say, great, he's going to be an SP5. He's going to be better than a 4 ERA, better than a 125 whip. Hopefully underneath 120, right? Should be. And double digit wins, like that's a possibility with better than a 20% strikeout rate. That's Matthew Boyd. You have Edward Cabrera now with the team. Eno Saris and I spent a long time discussing him on our last episode of The Craft. I will make this one quick because if you really want a deep analysis of Edward Cabrera, go check out SP Faces in New Places, that podcast with Eno. And the long story here is strike rate was way down on Edward Cabrera's fastballs. And then all of a sudden he said, hey, that's my four seamer. What if I did a sinker? Oh, that sinker has 15 points more strikes. So that's what he did. And that's how he got rid of his walk rate. And I had his whole rant because people were looking at walk rate and not understanding how he could be better at it because they're not looking at the pitches themselves. And they're just looking at the shallow level stats and how it's that's the input and you're looking at the output. And then I went on a longer rant about the output of results and not using that for pitch assessment, which, yeah, I'm not going to do that again. What I am going to say is that Edward Cabrera is in a really good situation. I trust the Cubs more so than the Marlins as a pitching development crew. I think even what he did in the second half with the Marlins last year was good. He has a slider that kind of acts like a cutter at 89 miles per hour that he's trying to go inside of lefties. The changeup could be the primary pitch against lefties at 94-95. It's not even like it's a changeup. It's just like a sinker that does really well with its fade. Because the sinker and the four-seamer to left-handed batters is just not good. They are clearly the weakest element of Edward Cabrera's game. So you throw sinkers to right-handers, keep it inside, with a curveball and a slider slash cutter. Great. Do that. Maybe some surprise four-seamers if you really want upstairs. And you can even throw the changeup to them. And then the lefties, you throw that changeup, you throw the cutter, and you throw a curveball. That's it. That's the ticket. Maybe some surprise sinkers down in a way to keep them honest on the changeup. That's what I would do with Edward Cabrera. I think it's great. Also, again, Bregman at third now and Swanson at short. Oh, it's going to be great. So I'm a huge fan of this for Edward Cabrera. The only downside is consistency. Now, that's in twofold. One of health and one of actual ability. We haven't really seen Edward Cabrera be the same pitcher throughout a full season yet. And we also just saw an elbow sprain in the summer of 2025. However, he did return And at the end of the year, he was throwing solid velocity. Like, it was very fine. The last start of the season against the Mets, he sat 1 to 2 ticks up in pretty much everything. And that means that I'm not really concerned about Eric Cabrera's elbow for this year. I've said this before. If a guy is hurt and then comes back and is fine, I treat that as if he has a normal offseason, everything is okay. If you want to avoid that ding, I understand. If it means like, nope, that elbow sprain there, it's going to appear again later. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Christopher Sanchez, everyone wants to forget that thing, right? We've seen it from Max Fried. We've seen it from Zach Wheeler and Zach Gallen and all that kind of stuff. Yes, those were forearm strains, not necessarily elbow strains. If you want to put different weight on that, you do you. I'm personally not going to do a major thing on that. I'm also not saying you should draft Eber Cabrera as an SP2. I have him around like 35, 40, something like that. And that makes him an SP4 for me in my 12 teamers. I'm cool with that. Jameson Taillon is also here. And I'm going to talk about him because he might be very sneaky of a draft pick this year. Maybe there's one more Cub who is a sleeper for 2026. And we'll talk about the other prospects as well. We're going to go over that and more after this break. Jameson Taillon, oh, buddy of the podcast. I was actually talking to him the other day about what he's trying to do for 2026. And I'll be honest with you, it's pretty straightforward. And you're going to say, well, duh, everyone's trying to do that. However, I do trust Taillon more with it, which is he wants to up his velocity. You might remember that from last season. That was his plan. But he's very much of like, look, I'm not going to just say, okay, I'm going to try to add some velo. Like, no, he's doing a proper plan to try and do it. And hopefully it does stick. I also talked to him about his cutter. And I've gone back and forth with him on it. If you saw the podcast where I broke down an entire start with him, you should check that out. I did it with 4 pitchers. I did it with Aaron Civale and Pablo Lopez, Jameson Taillon, and Cole Reagans. And it was one of the most fun things that I've done. So if you haven't taken a look at those podcasts, you got to go back and you can watch them on YouTube. They're amazing. And I remember back then with Taillon, so this was after the 2024 season. And I was talking to him about his cutter. And he told me how he was trying to go up and in with it. And Brandon Marsh hit a home run off of that cutter, a beautiful one. Somehow Brandon Marsh hit that yard. And he said, never again. And he started to do backdoor cutters. The thing is, against the left-handers, Taillon doesn't have anything on his glove side. He only has everything going away from right-handers or living backdoor, like a backdoor sweeper, backdoor cutter, backdoor changeup, or really fading off changeup, fading off sinker, etc. And maybe the curveball underneath down middle, but he doesn't have anything coming back. And I think that the cutter can actually be that inside as opposed to down and away. It also didn't do well down and away to lefties. It was not that common of an offering, but did get hit a little bit harder than expected. So what I'm getting at here is there are tweaks to be made with Taillon still, and I will go to, I'll go to court for him. I know that's not the phrase and I can't remember what it is, but I will support him in saying, yeah, Taillon knows how to make tweaks and make changes and how to attack the zone appropriately, when to nibble, when not to. And I really, really have faith that he is going to continue to beat his FIP and XFIP and everything because he constantly has, and it's also a good situation in Chicago. He's also in the right place because he's a strike thrower. And he had about a 68% quality start rate last year. Something to be said about that. Yeah, I think Jameson Taillon is a very sneaky play. He does not seem like the sexiest as he tries to get 20% strikeouts. Fine. But he could be going 170 innings or 60 innings at double-digit wins with a serviceable ERA and WHIP again. And there is value in that, knowing you have a starter that is going to be productive each time out, even if it's not the most strikeouts of anyone. There is absolutely value in that, Toby. So Jameson Taillon, someone to certainly consider in your 15 teamers and possibly your 12 teamers as well. Cade Horton is someone I am in on, I think. He overperformed last year. Let's just get that out of the way, where his entire approach should not have returned a 7.2 hit per nine. It was more over the plate and hittable than I would like to see. It wasn't as well spotted. That said, he throws a cut four-seamer, with two types of breaking balls. And I would say even that cut four seamer has different movement on it as well at times. And the sweeper to right-handers only had a 17% put away rate. It should be about 20% on average, but I think his is better. So it should be something closer to 23%, especially with its high swing strike rate. And the changeup still has work to be done against left-handers down and away. He had a sub 60% strike rate last year. So I think that Cade Horton is a command pitcher who is going to improve on his full ability in his second season. And because he throws strikes, he's not a guy that will walk a lot of batters. Because of that, Cade Horton is setting himself up for success with the Cubs. I love the fact that the Cubs are going after pitchers who throw strikes and aren't trying to be the electric stuffists who are more inefficient because, yeah, cut four-seamers are more effective at generating outs in general and getting through games relying on defense because the Cubs' defense is very, very good. And I think that Cade Horton has that ability while also having more in the strikeout department if those sweepers become more effective, if that changeup becomes more effective too. I mean, also the curveball. I mean, I think the curveball is really good. And I think that he's going to be going 90-plus pitches constantly, which means that win chances are good. Yeah, he's going to be a productive arm. And it's a little bit different than the other exciting sophomores from last year. Like you have Bubba Chandler, you have Nolan McClain, you have Cam Schlettler, you have Chase Burns, Jacob Mizorowski. He is of a different vein, right? But I think that Cade Horton is actually the safest of the lot to be productive this coming season. I know that's really weird to say. Definitely not the highest ceiling. Absolutely not. I would argue it's even the lowest. But the realistic ceiling? Still not the highest. Kind of in the middle. We'll see. You have Cullen Ray and Javier Assad is likely the first two options for the Cubs. And I would not consider either one. I think that Cullen Ray overperformed his four-seamer. I don't know how it does as well as it does. He threw more of them last year. He used to throw them more so in two-strike counts and get a surprising number of whiffs on that. And that's pretty much how he would use it, just save it for that. But then he upped it to about 35% last year instead of the sinker, and it still did well. I don't buy it at all. I don't love his arsenal at all. It was strange. It was something we just kind of shrugged our shoulders and said, fine. I guess this is our Justin Steele replacement. But when he does arrive, I think he's going to regress. And I would be careful because he won't even necessarily go long in those games initially if he does get a rotation spot. And I would just wait to see how he's doing and then play the matchups for a possible stream. Same kind of thing with Javier Assad. He's never had an ERA over 4, which is actually over 3.75, which is absolutely shocking. And I don't really get it. He plays into the defense, I guess, of the Cubs, right? He doesn't throw, you know, he throws a lot of strikes. They're just meh, in my view. And I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Okay? Like, it's a 15% strikeout rate last year. I'm sure that was only in 8 total games, 7 starts. But you're really just hoping for a 4 ERA. He won't go as long as his contemporaries to get wins. He had 4 wins in those 8 games, which is actually kind of amazing. But don't expect that. His whip will be questionable. Strikeouts aren't going to be there. So really just hoping that ERA is like 3.75. That is not good enough, in my view. More interesting is obviously Justin Steele when he does come back. He got Tommy John last year. We don't know when he's going to return exactly. We're hoping for a Kyle Bradish, Shane Bieber-esque return. And yeah, I think he should be good right away as long as he hasn't taken a massive step back in his ability. Justin Steele is someone who is able to command his four-seamer up and then inside doing the 7 of a lefty to a righty, which I always like to say, which is like upstairs or inside. He also manipulates that fastball really well to get cut action on it or keep it straight. And then you have the breaking balls, which is really two different ones as well with that slider, as he manipulates it more of a curveball look or more of a sweeping look. And he plays into the defense super, super well. I mean, Justin Steele is, I think, a very good pitcher. And his value, though, is in volume. So I'm not as confident necessarily as your former aces gonna ace guys of being successful right away because he's not, in all likelihood, going to flirt with a 30% strikeout rate, right? Bradish just had a 37% because his slider was that kind of pitch. And Justin Steele doesn't quite have that. So if he's only going 75 pitches in an appearance, then it's not going to be as valuable as the others. Still, there are going to be times in the year that you're going to see Justin Steele on your IL, on the waiver wire. And if you have an IL spot open, do it. Don't draft him because, I mean, sure, you can, but just have the discipline to let him go if you don't know when he's returning. Unless his return is imminent when you have that roster crunch, fine. I got to hold on to this for two more weeks. And maybe even you don't want to summer the first one and so on and so forth. But it's going to be like May when you have that roster crunch and Justin Steele will be at least a month away, if not like two or three. It's not worth it. Just make sure that you drop him in that time if you do happen to draft Justin Steele. Jordan Wicks is actually the one that I was hinting at before, because Jordan Wicks on paper could be a really good swatch. Southpaw with a tight changeup, right? And the reason I say that is, he has a tight changeup. It's really good. It is his best offering. It's great against righties. And when we saw him in relief when he returned at the end of 2025, he had high velocity. It was 94 to 95. I don't expect that to stick. I expect it to be 92, 93 again. And in 2024, Jordan Wicks also had 17 inches of vert. Got me excited about it, but he actually overexerted himself. He hurt his oblique. And what we saw when he returned in relief was not that. It was back down to like the 15 and change vert, right? So expect that at like 92, 93. Now the question is, can you locate it? If Jordan Wicks can just spot that four-seamer upstairs and have that changeup down, that's good enough for me against right-handers. Hopefully he can turn that slider into more of a cutter to right-handers, and that can be very effective inside to them. But really, just do that, and then your slider, which was located decently well last year, should be that pitch against lefties. You have to have that, right? It's those three, four-seamer, changeup, slider, as a lefty. If those three are working and spotted well, that makes you a swatch, essentially. So Jordan Wicks has that potential. I hope we see that. Hopefully he can go inside with his intent to jam lefties with sinkers. He didn't really locate it too well last year, but he had that intent. So just get that slider down and away to left-handers. Get that four-seamer upstairs and lean on that changeup, right? That could be a very good swatch. He just hasn't been efficient in his time so far. And I don't know if he will be, but there is that clear path to being sneaky value with Jordan Wicks, as nobody is drafting him right now. And he won't earn it right away. I do think that Ray and Assad have the inside lane to the first two openings for the Cubs, and we'll see how they use them. Is he going to be in relief again? I doubt it. I imagine Wicks will be in the minors and stretched out there and then brought up later. But Jordan Wicks, I think, is a very interesting one to circle. And you might be asking, wait, hold on a second. Isn't there another guy that got a lot of starts last year and you're not saying he should be in the rotation? Yeah, that would be Ben Brown. And unless Ben Brown does something vastly different, he should be a reliever. He is just made to be a reliever. Because Ben Brown throws a really good curveball. It is a hard one. It is tight movement. He's generally good at throwing it for strikes. It's awesome. But he has nothing else. He breaks the Wasker Ynoa rule. His four-seamer, sure, it's at 96 at times. He can push it to 98. Oh my gosh, amazing. But it really sits like 95. And it doesn't miss bats. It is a sub 10% swing strike rate four-seamer without good shape, without good extension, without good height-adjusted VAA. It's just empty velocity. And he doesn't command it super well. He can get it for strikes, but it's not like it's, oh, you have the Blake Snell blueprint working. Oh, you can go down and away with it or upstairs and you know how to do that right. So he's really just, please don't hit my four-seamer and let me get you out with the curve. That is reliever central. You also can imagine that the fastball becomes even more effective in relief because instead of pushing it to 98, he's actually sitting closer to 98 and maybe he can push it to 99 or so. And that would be way better for the Cubs because this just is not a guy who can go six at the moment. Maybe he has a cutter. That would be great. This is what solved Tyler Glasnow's problem. And he wasn't ever really a high swing strike rate four-seamer guy. It was more about the curveball. But then the slider showed up and that changed everything. Maybe that's it for Ben Brown. I've been shouting that since he arrived. But I don't expect it. and you shouldn't either. And I think that the Cubs are getting wise to it. We'll see what happens in the spring for Ben Brown. If he does really have that cutter that he's throwing a ton and it's really a true three pitch mix, then I'd be much more excited about it. Also, if it's clear that he is going to be a starter of some kind, but I doubt that. With the prospects for the Cubs, I'm going to get some out of the way first. Will Sanders, Connor Noland, and Nick Dean. Will Sanders and Noland are both in AAA, and neither of them are exciting. Noland throws like 90-mile-per-hour cut fastballs, and it's classified as a cutter, but it's really a cut four-seamer, and they have another pitch as a four-seamer that is just not good. And yeah, this is not it. It's way too trying to be crafty and whatever, and for prospects, this is not the kind of guy you want to go for. He's at 26-2, so there really isn't much hope outside of being a pristine command guy. You have Will Sanders. He doesn't really excite me either. He fills up the zone at 92, and he doesn't find the edge. I mean, I looked at his minor league card, and it's just, I can't see the strike zone because fastballs just cover everything, and that's not good. You know, he has a cutter and a sinker to go with a changeup and a splitter and also a curve. Yeah, he has a 7-pitch mix, but it's nothing special. He could be a Toby, right? It could be one of those things that he's able to manipulate all this stuff, like kind of Seth Lugo. But is any of it really elite? Like, it's an 82-mile-per-hour gyro slider that has a little bit extra drop, but generally we see that at 82. I don't like it. It's just such big movement ranges with everything. So I'm not a fan of that. Nick Dean is in AA. And what happened with him is that he had a ton of strikeouts and then kind of didn't when he got moved up. And with Nick Dean, it's a changeup. It's a really, really good changeup and a pair of breaking balls that are fine. But there's nothing else, and he has low 90s velocity, and he's a right-hander that's changeup focused, and you know I don't like that. It can eventually work in the majors, kind of, but it needs to start with something else. If you're chasing prospects, changeup first guys, not the ones you want to go for. And the last one is actually the one that is interesting and could be very much a league pickup for you. Like, he's a spec guy the second he gets the call. He just got to AAA, and I apologize, I was thinking of Jackson Wiggins when I was saying Nick Dean about the strikeout stuff. So what happened with Wiggins is he had 83 strikeouts last year in A plus ball and double A in just 68 and change frames. Okay, so he was striking out a ton of batters, and they said, fine, let's put you up to AAA. And he only had 2 games there, and it wasn't his best. So he has 97, 98 mile per hour velocity, and that's sitting that, right? 97.7. Okay, he has 2 plane break, over 10 inches of horizontal, this is all from the right side, and over 16 inches of vert. That's cool. And he has with a cutter that is like a gyro slider, but like 4 vert instead of 0. That's great. I will take that at like 90s, at like 90 mile per hour. And those two right there, throwing 98, that is good. It's not like the most elite four-seamer I've ever seen, but as long as he's throwing strikes with that, that's good. And if he pairs that with that cutter at 90, great. That, like, right there, we've seen that work in the majors alone. Now, he does have a changeup with good drop against lefties. I don't know how good that is and consistent, but it seems like he's in the general area for it and has decent feel for it. So if that's the case, that he has a lefty weapon with his changeup along with the cutter and then has the essentially a fastball, four-seamer, slider combo for righties, that works as long as he can maintain that upper 90s velocity throughout starts. So he's already got 2 games in AAA. I would be shocked if Jackson Wiggins makes the rotation out of camp. I don't see how, unless there are injuries in the way. There's no reason for the Cubs to push this. Just see what he does in AAA. If he's completely mowing down batters, we will be talking about him as a stash play whenever there is a moment. Now, remember, when it comes to prospect call-ups, it's all about what the options are for teams. And with Colin Ray and Assad and Wicks, it does feel like there are other guys before Wiggins. However, again, if he is really dominating, he becomes a spec ad. Especially when he does get the call, I would consider just seeing what happens with him. That is the Cubs. We're going to get the Mets next because I did a podcast with the New York Post's podcast, Flushing, something with Flushing. Oh my gosh, I should know this. My friend Dexter Henry, who I love the guy, and I'm really lucky to be a friend of his. So I go on that podcast every so often, talked about the Mets, broke them down yesterday, did all my research for it. So why not? They're top of mind. I'm going to be doing that article, starting it today and finishing it tomorrow, putting it out for the site. But the next podcast you hear will be about the New York Mets. So stay tuned for that. But that is it for today. I am so excited about all the things coming. We have an article coming out, I believe, in 2 days. That is the roadmap for PitcherList. That includes, of course, PitchCon coming at the end of this month, and what it means for the live draft assistant update that we're putting out, the pro dashboard that we're putting out. Lots of things are in our future here at PitcherList, and we can't wait to share what our plans are with you. And hopefully you want to help us get there. As you know, at PitcherList, we are not the kind of people to put our feet up and just stay stagnant. We always want to be improving, giving more value to PL Pro members, giving more to the community, and creating this baseball sanctuary that we think is so important in this modern internet climate. So hopefully you can help us keep the lights on. Even just getting a PL Plus subscription, $5 a month, just those go a long way for us as well. We also have a 10% off every single, 10% off your yearly subscription to PL Pro with promo code podcast. And in addition, we do have our lifetime subscription open. It's for a limited amount of time. Obviously, I can't allow everyone to do it because then we don't have future subscription revenue. However, we do it about once a year. And if you want to be a part of it, go to pitcherlist.com/lifetime. You can sign up today. I guarantee you, we will be here for far longer than the 4-year commitment that lifetime is. You also get a free sweatshirt, PitcherList Hall of Famer, and of course, extra perks inside of the Discord. And we cannot thank all of our lifetime subscribers enough. You guys are the best, and you've helped us keep the lights on in these crucial, crucial winter months of January, February, and March. That is it. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.